The Science, Space, and Technology Committee will resume our hearing, and if Mr. Collier, Mr. Halford would come forward and be seated. And I'll introduce our two witnesses. Our first witness on the second panel is Mr. Tom Collier, Chief Executive Officer for Pebble Limited Partnership. Prior to this position, Mr. Collier enjoyed a 40-year legal career with Steptoe & Johnson. There, he helped guide companies through the federal environmental permitting process. He has worked on several Alaskan resource projects. In addition to his legal career, Mr. Collier was the Chief of Staff for the U.S. Department of the Interior. Mr. Collier received his bachelor's degree in international relations from the University of Virginia and his law degree from the University of Mississippi. Our other witness is Senator Rick Halford, former Alaska State Senator and representative of Trout Unlimited. Senator Halford served for nearly 25 years in the Alaska State Senate with multiple terms as both Senate President and Senate Majority Leader. In addition, he served as an RNC committee man for Alaska and earned a Defender of Freedom Award from the NRA. Prior to joining the Alaska State Senate, Senator Halford was a float plane pilot, and he earned his bachelor's degree from Alaska Methodist University. We welcome you both and appreciate your being here and appreciate your patience as well, since we're running a little bit late. And Mr. Collier, if you'll begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify today. As you all know, there's a well-worn pathway to build a natural resources project in America. You file your permit application, you go to the Corps of Engineers. Corps of Engineers selects an independent contractor to do an extensive environmental impact statement and then makes a decision on your permit. In fact, the environmental organizations refer to the environmental impact statement as the Magna Carta of environmental protection, and in fact, I agree with them on that characterization. In our situation, however, EPA decided to abandon this well-worn pathway. And for the first time ever in the history of the statute, it's issued an intent to veto our project before we've even filed a permit application. The question is, why have they done this? A starting point in that analysis is recognizing that there's no environmental harm that will happen whatsoever if we're simply allowed to go through the permit process. We don't get to build a mine. We don't get to turn a shovel of dirt. In fact, we go through the permit process. But you don't need to speculate on why, because we've found documents, internal documents within EPA, that clearly explain what their motive is, what their intent in establishing this precedent is. The first one is that they want the opportunity, when there is a controversial project before them, to take jurisdiction away from the Corps of Engineers, away from the state, and to leave it unilaterally with EPA. Second, and this is language straight from EPA documents, they want to establish a precedent for proactive watershed planning for sustainability. They want to be able to go out there and look at a watershed and decide whether or not it should be a park or it should be something subject to development. They want something akin to local zoning authority to reside within EPA. They want to be able to zone the watersheds of America. I don't think the Clean Water Act gives them that authority. The problem is, when a federal agency wanders off the well-worn pathway, there's opportunity for mischief. And here, that mischief has been extensive. As detailed more in my written statement, and as Secretary Cohen just eloquently testified to, EPA, in my view, predetermined the outcome with respect to Pebble. That's what the documents show. And they manipulated the process in order to get to that outcome. Just a couple of examples, and the record is full of many of these examples. EPA says that they initiated this process because petitions were drafted by Native tribes and submitted to them. The documents show that as early as January, the year before these petitions were submitted in June, an EPA employee and an environmental activist colluded to draft those petitions and then circulated them to the tribes that signed them. In addition, they worked together, an EPA employee and an environmental activist, to draft the decision memo that would be used by the regional administrator. This was being done before the petitions had even been filed. And the decision memo, the EPA decision memo, was being drafted not just in EPA, but was being drafted with the participation of environmental activists. I worked in a federal agency that dealt with environmental issues, and if that had happened on my watch, that employee would have been fired that day. That's how egregious this conduct is. The BBWA that resulted from this has been characterized by EPA as good science. It's not good science. How in the world do you take a scientific look at the environmental impacts of a project when you don't know what the project is? There's no project on the table. Second, what they did to get around this is they assigned a biologist in Alaska to design the mine that they assumed Pebble would design. And that biologist designed the mine, Phil North, designed it so that it would have the most egregious environmental impacts so that they could use those impacts as their justification for deciding that the mine should be vetoed. Phil North, by the way, fled the country in order to avoid a subpoena from another committee of Congress. Look, the impact of this preliminary veto, this preemptive veto on Pebble has been devastating. But it's not just an impact on Pebble. This is going to have an impact across the country. We have invested $750 million to get ready to go into permitting. And EPA is trying to tell us unilaterally that we cannot even initiate the permitting process. If you send that message to people out there regarding natural resource projects across America, nobody's going to stand in line to file permits. Nobody's going to invest in the permitting process. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Collier. Senator Halford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank
you. Is your mic on? There we go.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm one of the many defenders of this watershed, including departed friends like Ted Stevens, Jay Hammond, and inspirational elders like Bobby Andrew and Ophi Olson, Mary Olympic, and Violet Wilson. I'm here today humbly in their behalf, and I believe that the people of Bristol Bay who've been dependent on these resources for untold generations, and I believe in the defense of the 14,000 jobs and the $1.5 billion annual fishery that's supported by Bristol Bay Wild Salmon. I live in Bristol Bay and in Chugiak. I've been a commercial pilot and a hunting guide for all my adult life, although I spent 24 years in a detour to the state legislature. I retired as Senate president in 2003. In all my years in the legislature, I never ran without the support of the Alaska mining industry. I was active in their support. I believe that mining is important to Alaska. You've heard today that EPA has been unfair and has made its mind up in advance. Neither of these things could be further from the truth. The truth is that while EPA was far from the first choice of the people of Bristol Bay in terms of getting someone to listen, EPA was the only choice with the authority and the jurisdiction that had the interest to help. And sadly to me, that included the state of Alaska. The truth is EPA listened to the people of Bristol Bay, responded by preparing the most objective assessment of the potential impacts of a massive sulfide mine in this particular location. If there's any unfairness in this discussion, it was reduced by Pebble. For years, they've tried to manufacture consent for their project. Their obvious efforts to manufacture that consent collapsed under the weight of facts and growing public opposition. Pebble has shown that it's willing to do or say anything to advance this project. By now, the opposition has grown to roughly 90% of the people in the region and about 60% of the people in Alaska statewide. Of the 1.8 million comments EPA got, 85% were in support of the process and EPA. The more people have learned about this mine, the stronger the opposition has grown. This is in part due to Pebble's numerous false promises, and they're listed in my written testimony in terms of when they're going to apply, when they're going to apply, and the continuous parade of changes in their process. Pebble's contention that the outcome was predetermined is ridiculous. As an advocate, those of us in Bristol Bay couldn't even agree on what to ask for. We didn't know anything about 404C. We looked first to the state and then went on through federal agencies in any way to look for help. EPA's action thus far, if finalized, places protection on the resources of Bristol Bay. Pebble must show that it can mine and protect those resources. They can apply for a permit today, tomorrow, the next day. Nothing has been vetoed. Pebble has the opportunity to prove its critics wrong. They've done no field work for the last 2 years, and they're only waiting for the right political climate. The stress and uncertainty on the people of Bristol Bay has been a cloud for over a decade. If there's unfairness, it's the unfairness to the people of Bristol Bay. The uncertainty makes it difficult even for legitimate mining projects to get support to develop in Alaska because of that uncertainty. Senator Murkowski, 2 years ago, asked Pebble to file their permits and get the process started. As finance chairman and presiding officer in Alaska in years in the process, I probably signed appropriations to sue EPA. My attitude was not positive as we started this process, and I know there are many issues and conflicts with EPA, but my experience in Alaska with the EPA personnel, from the secretaries and the office people to the top administrators, was amazingly positive. It changed my perceptions about a huge, faraway bureaucracy. They came and they listened. And I want to take this opportunity to thank those people because I think they did their best in a difficult situation in this one place that I saw very extensively. Today, the people of Bristol Bay are left with questions and fear about the massive exploration project in the head of their watershed. There are over 1,300 drill holes, thousands of settling ponds, potentially acid-generating material in those settling ponds, and tons of material stored on the land at their headwaters. Pebble should be using its resources to seal their problem wells, to assure there's no acid drainage, and to clean up their mess. Now, I am fortunate to have wonderful children, and whenever I say, particularly to my 13-year-old, clean up your mess, his response is, it's not fair. I think it is fair to the people of Bristol Bay for Pebble to spend their energy to clean up their mess. Thank you for your time and your consideration, sir.
Thank you, Senator Halford. Instead of recognizing myself first, I'm going to recognize the gentleman from Texas, Mr. Babin, for his questions.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it, and I want to thank the witnesses for being here as well. I would ask that a slide be placed up here in just a second, but first I want to ask Mr. Halford a question. You were the recipient of the notes taken by a Trout Unlimited colleague at a meeting between the EPA and several opponents of the Pebble Mine. And I'd like to point everyone's attention to some excerpts from these notes in light of the fact that we just heard Secretary Cohen testify under oath that there should never be any politics involved in the review process. But I would point your attention to these notes. And this was a notes that were from Richard Parkins, who was the project leader of the Bristol Bay project and working for the Environmental Protection Agency. It says in the bottom red line, this is what he said. This is the EPA's own representative at the time at this meeting. It said that clarified, it is stressed that while a 404C determination would be based on science, he says politics are as big or a bigger factor. Now, how do you, was it your understanding, Mr. Halford, Senator Halford, that politics would play as big or as big a factor as what Mr. Parkins said, than the science and EPA's decision to use Section 404C to stop the Pebble Mine? And bearing in mind what Secretary Coyne had just testified just a few minutes ago?
Well, certainly you're talking about something that happened in 2011. I don't remember anything about it, and I can see the date, but I don't know. I mean, I don't think politics should be the factor. Obviously, that's not the way the
process Tuesday, should. February 22nd, 2011 at 4:26 p.m. That's the date and time.
I can't remember that conversation at all. If it was a memo, particularly if it came by email, I'm one of those people that still lives in an analog world, so I have trouble just keeping track of all my emails.
Well, in light of the fact that we just heard Secretary Coyne say that in these types of decisions, when we're using supposedly using science, and we have the EPA's own project leader saying that science does play a big factor, but politics can be a big factor or bigger factor. That leads me to believe that this is not really based on science after all.
I have no idea how he was saying it. He might have been saying it as an objection to what politics has influence on. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't recall.
Mr. Collier, EPA's Bristol Bay project leader, Richard Parkin, whose name and quote is here, admitted that politics would play as large a role as the science, in fact, even a larger role, in its determination to stop the Pebble Mine. If this is the feeling of the agency at EPA, how then can the judgment and impartiality of the EPA be trusted at all in these decisions?
Congressman, obviously I've questioned their judgment in these proceedings, and I think this is one example of why. I'd like to point out to the committee that Mr. Parkin was the leader of the scientific effort for this, and this is what he's saying. And I think that's endemic of the problem. Mr. Congressman, I've probably read more internal memos and emails regarding this situation than anyone else in this room. And this is just one of dozens of examples of this kind of concern. And the criticism of Secretary Coyne's report that it's not independent, what hasn't been criticized is the detailed citation throughout that 350 pages where every one of his statements has been cited back to a document from EPA to verify its authenticity.
Thank you very much to both of you witnesses. And I think the only conclusion you can draw is that science is not the the biggest criteria they use to come up with these permits. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Babin. The gentleman from Virginia, Mr. Byers, recognized for his comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, very much. And thank you to the witnesses, both. Yeah, the heart of the question today seems to be, why did the EPA feel the need to use the 404C process rather than just wait for Pebble to file a mining permit? Senator Halford talked about the stress and uncertainty of the people of Bristol Bay, and I'd like to use my time to help the public understand why the EPA took the actions that it has, and to help show the potential consequences of a mine failure in Bristol Bay. The Pebble Partnership has pledged that they would operate their mine safely, and that it would contain modern engineering practices that would prevent virtually any conceivable accident from occurring. And they have repeatedly pointed to the Fraser River in British Columbia, and specifically the Mount Polley mine, as a working example of a mine with modern engineering that has had a minimal impact on the surrounding environment. I'd like to start by playing a video the Pebble Partnership produced on the coexistence of mines and fish in the Fraser River Basin several years ago.
This summer, on Canada's Fraser River, 34 million salmon fought their way upstream. As fishermen competed to haul in the largest sockeye run in a century, upriver, hundreds of miners worked in several large open-pit copper mines. In Alaska, Bristol Bay has its own world-class fishery and is home to its own world-class copper deposit, Pebble. Like the Fraser River, it's not about trading one resource for another. It's about mining and fisheries coexisting. This summer.
So that was very encouraging. And in 2012, in response to the EPA's analysis of the potential impact of a pebble mine could have on the Bristol Bay watershed, John Shively, the CEO of Pebble Partnership and now is chairman of the board of directors, wrote the EPA arguing that their analysis had used faulty assumptions based on outdated mining technology. He attached 7 white papers, including 3 by the international engineering firm Knight Piesold, and 2 papers that focus on the coexistence of mining and salmon in the Fraser River. I've pre-recorded excerpts from that letter and those papers over a video of the Mount Polly Mine's tailing ponds rupture. This occurred in August 2014, sending 25 million cubic meters of water and mine waste into the waterways of the Fraser River Basin. If we can now play that video. John Shively, then the CEO of Pebble, sent this letter to the EPA in July 2012, criticizing EPA's Bristol Bay watershed assessment. I now read from his letter. The assessment ignores standards of best practice in modern engineering design, and the environmental impacts have been greatly overstated. EPA appears to have focused almost exclusively on past mine failures in its assessment, rather than on mine successes, particularly those currently operating under modern engineering design standards. This approach suggests an inherent bias in EPA's assessment that undermines its utility and would certainly lead to arbitrary and capricious agency action if the information contained in the assessment is used in support of future decision making. Furthermore, the white papers Pebble submitted to the EPA examined 4 mines along the Fraser River Basin as examples of modern engineering practices and construction standards, including the Mount Polly Mine. They said, in part, tailing dams can be built to stand indefinitely, provided the right procedures, protocols, checks, and monitoring are in place. No engineering design-related failures that resulted in significant downstream effects to the receiving environment at any of these 4 mines were identified. The engineered structures located at these mine sites are the result of modern engineering design and construction standards. They are no more likely to fail than modern high-rises, hydroelectric dams, or highway bridges. The overall risk of the Mount Polly mine to fisheries is very low. I want to emphasize that I was reading it, but those are not my words. These came from the previous CEO of Pebble Mine and the reports that were issued. So we see the incredible irony and unhappiness of that. So 3 questions that come out. What was the cause of the Mount Polly tailings pond breach? An expert panel found that the geological features of the tailings dam were neglected in its construction and concluded that, quote, the design was doomed to failure. Who designed the Mount Polly tailings storage facility? Well, it's the same firm that produced the 3 white papers that we read from, arguing that modern engineering standards had prevented any failures at the Mount Polly mine and would prevent any future mishaps at Pebble's Bristol Bay mine. It's also the same company hired to design Pebble's tailings dam at the proposed mine in Bristol Bay. Finally, what was the environmental impact of the Mount Polly mine breach? Not yet clear, but what is clear is that the Pebble partnership pointed to the Mount Polly mine as an example of what we could expect from modern engineering practices that would be used to construct their mine in Bristol Bay. Hence, the stress and uncertainty of the people of Bristol Bay. Senator Halford, how do you respond to this? What are your thoughts?
I guess the question, and there's been some discussion about the uniqueness of the process and how the process has gone, how hard the people of Alaska tried to get somebody to listen for a decade or more. But I think the other part of it is this is the last greatest salmon resource left on Earth. It's the only place where you have all 5 species and the dependent culture totally intact. Is this the place that we should experiment with something that has never worked in all of history in a wet climate in a comparable size? I don't think it is. I think it's a very, very dangerous experiment. And again, if this one goes, it's the last one. Salmon have been destroyed all over the globe, sadly.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Beyer. Mr. Collier, first of all, let me recognize myself for questions, and Mr. Collier, would you like to respond?
Thank you. Congressman Beyer, I know that you've been a champion your career of the environmental impact statement process. This is exactly the kind of thing that ought to be examined very rigorously and very thoroughly in an environmental impact statement setting. And that's what we're asking for. That's all. Just let us have due process. As to your questions, though, I'm on record have been since the Mount Polley situation occurred, that we would not go forward with any permit application without an independent review of anything that Knight Piesel came close to on our project. But let me give you a little bit of background that you may not know about this situation. Knight Piesel withdrew as the engineer of record years before the failure of Mount Polley. And they did so because of an expressed concern that the facility was not being managed according to the way it was designed. It was designed as a tailings facility to store essentially sand. It was being used to store wastewater. And the reason the facility failed is because there was way too much water in that facility, and it essentially overtopped. That's the kind of thing we need rigorous enforcement to make sure doesn't ever happen anywhere in the world, especially in America, and we would support that strongly. There's an existing criminal inquiry going on in Canada with respect to this occurrence, and if they find the facts that are necessary, the industry will support where that should go. But we're the first ones to say that rigorous enforcement of design characteristics are very important in the mining industry everywhere in the world, and we're confident that would be the case in America if we build ours in Alaska. But the real point, Congressman, is we need an environmental impact statement to look at these issues and lots of other issues, and that's all we're asking for, just process.
Thank you, Mr. Collier. My next question is this. What are the implications for private property owners of the EPA's regulatory overreach? What are the implications for the private property owners? They're the ones, to me, that are ought to be most concerned.
You know, Mr. Chairman, there's a lot of criticism often of something that's called the Antiquities Act. And that's the process by which the President of the United States can sign a document and withdraw federal land and make it a park. What you're faced with here, through the use of 404C preemptively, is the Antiquities Act on steroids. Because now, the administrator of EPA can unilaterally sign a document and withdraw not just federal land, but withdraw state land and private land and essentially declare it a park, never to be developed, without an environmental impact statement, all right? This is outrageous. I think that private landowners around America should be extremely concerned about what this precedent can set.
Okay.
This gives EPA extraordinary powers that the statute didn't give them. There's not a word in that statute that says this is what ought to occur.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Collier. My last question goes to the appearance that taxpayers' dollars were actually used to lobby against Pebble Mine. I'm going to ask you what evidence we have of that, but I also, as a way to emphasize the significance of it, want to read to members of the committee an excerpt from 18 U.S. Code paragraph 1913, lobbying with appropriated monies. No part of the money appropriated by any act of Congress shall be used directly or indirectly to pay for any personal service, advertisement, telegram, telephone, letter, printed or written matter, or other device intended or designed to influence in any manner a member of Congress, a jurisdiction, or an official of any government to favor, adopt, or oppose by vote or otherwise any legislation, law, ratification, policy, and so forth. The penalties for doing so are fines that range from $10,000 to $100,000 for each individual violation of that law. Would you like to comment on that?
Well, I'm aware of the penalties of the anti-lobbying statute. I know anyone that runs a federal agency in America is quite aware of them. Congressman, I haven't seen any documents that provide the kind of evidence that would be necessary to bring a prosecution under the anti-lobbying statute. But I got to tell you, I've got a lot of concern about that issue and Pebble. My concern may be a step away, and whether it's actually a violation of the statute, I don't know. But the collusion between environmental activists and EPA in this matter are extraordinary. There are over 1,000 times there were contacts between them. They've documented 30 with Pebble, to put that into some kind of relative consideration. Massive lobbying campaign and massive public relations campaign undertaken by those environmental organizations that were in constant contact with EPA. I can't help but wonder whether EPA wasn't suggesting to them that maybe they could be aided if those organizations did some lobbying for them.
Thank you, Ms. Collier. Just to reassure you and others, we will be continuing our investigation into whether or not the anti-lobbying statute was violated. Thank you. The next person up is the gentlewoman from Oregon, Ms. Bonamici.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And again, we absolutely need to hear from the EPA. The people of Oregon and Northwest, part of the United States, are keenly aware of the potential repercussions of an open pit copper mine and what that would do to sports fishing, commercial fishing in Bristol Bay. Pebble's exploratory activities are already having a negative toll. A 2015 Alaska Department of Natural Resources report examined 24 of 1,300 exploratory drill holes and found that 8 of those 24 had already leached acidic waste into waterways in the region or have caused other environmental damage. I have a copy of a reclamation petition dated November 3rd, filed by 15 Alaska-based organizations and individuals calling for Pebble to assess the damage that they've caused and demanding that they come up with a cost estimate and timeline for remediation, and I ask that this petition be included in the record, Mr. Chairman.
Without objection.
And I also sent a letter to the EPA Administrator McCarthy, along with several of my colleagues from the Northwest. This is dated January 30th, 2014, urging the Administrator to use the authority given to the EPA under the Clean Water Act to protect the Bristol Bay salmon fisheries from the potentially devastating impacts of the proposed Pebble Mine, and I would like to enter this into the record as well. Thank you. Senator Halford, I know you fly over Bristol Bay regularly, and we saw some pictures. I wonder if you could just mention what you see now and expand on the current repercussions of the mining activities. But I want you to be brief because I have another important issue I want to ask you about.
Well, the last time I flew over it was probably just about a week ago, and there was no activity but an awful lot still left on the land. 2 years ago, they cleaned up their fuel dump on what they called, I think, Big Wiggly Lake. But there hasn't been much of anything done since then. And again, the settling ponds where they drilled down through, in some cases, a mile deep into basically what's a sulfur deposit, if it were named for its biggest mineral, those things have the potential of acid generation. They're sitting there like test cells in the watershed. They're dangerous.
Thank you. And I need to ask you, too, that we've heard a lot about subpoenas this morning and also lobbying. I understand that there's been a significant amount of money spent by the company lobbying as well and with a public relations campaign. But can you talk a little bit about this talk about at least 72 subpoenas that are going to be issued or have been issued? What's the talk about that among people in Alaska? Is it stifling debate or silencing critics?
There's a very sad case that is actually turned around when it went to the Supreme Court, but one of the Constitutional Convention delegates and a former First Lady filed a suit against the state and Pebble on water rights application just to get notice. When they lost at the lower court, Pebble proceeded to try and research to go after them individually for the money, for the legal costs. They lost at the Supreme Court, so it never went forward from there. But the point is, these kinds of actions stop people from trying to question what's being done out there.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, but I also want, Mr. Chairman, to read from a letter sent to Secretary Cohen from an assistant attorney general at the U.S. Department of Justice in April. This is in response to a letter Secretary Cohen wrote in March of 2015 to the Department of Justice about the purported independent review of this issue. And the letter from the Justice Department reads in part, quote, "The federal courts provide the appropriate forum for resolving Pebble's allegations against EPA. As you are aware, this matter is in litigation in three separate lawsuits filed by Pebble against EPA in connection with EPA's assessment of the potential environmental effects of Pebble's proposed mine activities." The letter continues, "Your review obviously overlaps with the pending litigation. Then the letter went on to say that Pebble has sought a preliminary injunction regarding Section 404C activities, and purportedly the letter said, quote, so it could maintain its legal rights in the status quo, not so that it could launch its own private investigation into the EPA's actions. Pebble's attempting to obtain government information relating to its pending claims against the United States outside of the normal discovery context, close quote, the letter continued. This letter is contained in a report released yesterday by the Natural Resources Defense Council. That report is titled The Demeaning of Independence, which is a rebuttal to the Cohen Report. And I ask that this report, which contains the letter I quoted, also be entered into the record. Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, I do want to emphasize that it would be inappropriate for this committee to follow up on the advice that was raised earlier this morning for the committee to issue subpoenas for information that might be used by the Pebble Partnership solely as a tool in its current litigation. The Department of Justice knows this and recognizes it, and members of this committee should know that as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I yield back the balance.
Thank you, Ms. Bonamici. The gentleman from Texas, Mr. Weber, is recognized for his questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Collier, this question is for you. What is your understanding of the decision EPA undertook to initiate the Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment? Did the EPA initiate this study to gather more information, or did it seem more like a preemptive 404C action?
Congressman, give me just 1 second, please, sir, to respond quickly to a couple of other points raised. There's been no finding by the Department of Natural Resources based on the recent tour that we had leached acidic waste into the environment. The 24 wells were not random samples. The 8 that were leaking water, we took DNR to those 8 because we had noted they were leaking water. To show them what was going on, we brought this to their attention, and we wanted them to see what we intended to do in order to plug that water from leaking in the future. Any suggestion that we have any issues out there, we are 100% in compliance with our permits. Mr. Congressman, from the get-go, there has been a decision made at EPA to veto this project. There are countless emails that show that. I saw a couple new ones just within the last few days.
If I may, let me put you on hold right there. I have a slide I wanted to get your take on. If we can put the slide up. If you look at this email communication, it's between EPA employees David Evans and Palmer, I guess it's Huff, H-O-U-G-H, is how that would be pronounced, regarding Alaska Senator Murkowski's press release upon the EPA's announcement to conduct the Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment. In it, David Evans writes, and I'm quoting, interesting spin on EPA's announcement/decision. Her communications would suggest no 404C would be done until all the science is in. Now, here's the smoking gun, David Evans says. Obviously, that's not what we have in mind, end quote. Does it get, when you see a statement like that, do you think a reasonable person says, now the EPA's probably objective on this matter?
And you know, Congressman, this is one of dozens of such emails. The one I saw just yesterday was one where they were talking back and forth, and one says to the other, you know, there are two options. We can do a little science and then veto it, or we can just veto it without doing the science. And they said, well, at least we don't have a disagreement of what the end result is.
That's the juror to the judge. Judge, let's give him a fair trial and then hang him.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why, you know, our request continues to be just let us have due process. Give us an environmental impact statement. Give us an independent to review that environmental impact statement. And then we'll have this debate. We recognize there are environmental challenges with building a mine in Bristol Bay. But we think we've got answers to those if we can just get an opportunity to have that debate.
So you're in business. I own an air conditioning company 34 years. I've dealt with the EPA over Freon issues for a long time. So as a business as a business people, we would say, well, the EPA's job is to be a fair and an impartial judge, if you will, to make an assessment based on something that you, the business community, brings the EPA. It's not, I would argue, say, if you agree, that it's not necessarily EPA's job to go out before you bring them something and to tell you, hey, don't bother bringing this to you because we're not going to approve it. Would you agree with that?
Congressman, I do, and I think fair process is what it's all about. One of the proudest things I've had a chance to do in my career was to work with Vice President Gore and Secretary Babbitt on the spotted owl timber issue in the Pacific Northwest. And I was part of a team that was helped manage that situation, and our goal was, for the first time in a handful of times, to be able to put together a scientific report that would withstand judicial scrutiny. Been thrown out a number of times before because of process issues, and we did that. And there are a couple things we did that were very important. We made sure we had independent scientists that didn't have pre-stated views
sure.
on the issue. That did not happen here. And we didn't allow there to be contact between the stakeholders and the decision makers as the process was going on. Those were two fundamentally fair things we did, and neither of those is present.
Well, I'm running out of time, but I would argue that in this case, it seems apparent to me that the EPA has acted as judge, jury, and executioner in killing this project.
Prosecutor also, sir.
Mr. Chair, I yield back.
Thank you, Mr. Weber. The gentleman from Arkansas, Mr. Westman, is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to follow up from the gentleman from Texas, I do believe the discussion today has devolved more into where there should be a mine in Bristol Bay or whether it should or shouldn't be a mine, but the real question here is about a fair and impartial process to determine whether there should be a mine. And Mr. Collier, Secretary Cohen testified that EPA employee Phil North and Jeff Parker, an attorney representing groups opposed to the Pebble Mine, were in regular contact about what action EPA could take with regard to the Pebble Mine. As the CEO of the mining development company, how does this make you feel?
I've always been shocked by the actions of my government in this situation. I've twice left my law practice and gone into government service. That's an important part of my my family's history. I can't believe that this is the kind of thing, that politics has taken us where it's taken us on issues like this. As I read these documents, the reason we filed our Federal Advisory Committee Act case, and that's a case, by the way, where a federal judge has granted us a preliminary injunction, and you know you got to show you've got a likelihood of succeeding on the merits before you get a preliminary injunction. But the reason we filed that case is, as I took off to vacation with me, two duffel bags full of documents and sat down and read them all. And at the conclusion of that, I was shocked with what I found. Because what I found was collusion between the decision makers and environmental activists. And we can't allow that in this country. It's going to chase off investment. It's going to stop people from wanting to step forward to put these projects together. The amount of money you got to spend to get ready to go into permitting is astronomical today. And we've done that, and all we want is due process. And Congressman, if you can do anything to help us, we sure would be appreciative.
Well, and this issue is about much more than a mine in Alaska. It's policy that affects the whole country and projects that could potentially take place all across the country. There's a slide I would like to have shown. This is from Phil North, who worked with the EPA, and it's an email between Mr. North and Jeff Parker, who is an attorney representing groups opposed to the Pebble Mine. And if you look, the date on this is April 12, 2009. And we see here from Mr. North, he said, a few suggested edits. I keep trying to include ecological impacts, but if they make the sentences awkward, then delete. Of course, ignore any suggestions anyway. Given this email, Mr. Collier, from your perspective, how can you feel that Pebble Mine received any fair treatment by the EPA?
It's been a long time since I felt we ever got any fair treatment, Congressman, so it's a little tough to answer that question. But this is one of the situations that first shocked me so much. What's going on here, this is one of a whole handful of emails. What's going on here is that EPA is drafting the petitions that they said were then the reason why they launched the process against us. I mean, that's poppycock. They launched this process against us because they'd always planned to kill this project, particularly Phil North. And he's helping draft the petitions that he then said were the reasons why he initiated this process. So it's not just that they were working on this together. They then misled the rest of us about why they moved forward with this proposed veto.
So have you ever competed and lost in anything?
Yes, I have.
So have you ever felt like you competed and it was an unfair competition?
I have indeed.
So we've all had times when we win and when we lose, but it's a little bit harder to swallow when we feel like it was an unfair competition. If you were able to go through the process and your permit was denied and you couldn't build the mine, how would you feel about it if you thought the process was fair?
You know, if we go through the permit process and we don't get a permit, that's an entirely different situation. What galls me is that for the first time in the history of the Clean Water Act, for the first time in handfuls of administrators of EPA, there's been a decision made to put us out of business before we even file a permit application. I think it's outrageous.
Looks like I'm out of time, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Westman. The gentleman from Alabama, Mr. Palmer, is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Collier, Secretary Cohen testified that EPA employees were considering preemptive 404C process for the Pebble Mine as early as 2005. The documents obtained by the committee show that the EPA employee Phil North began preparing a record to base a preemptive 404C action as early as 2009. Tell me, if you would, explain to the committee why these actions concern you.
Well, there are two things that concern me, and I think Secretary Cohen, much more eloquently than I'll be able to do, put his finger on both of them. The first one is, even if they'd done this fairly, this is not a process you should use in this situation. 404C preemptively is not something you should use for a controversial project like this. It deserves to go through the entire permitting process, period. But second, he also said that the documents that he looked at raised serious questions as to whether the agency hadn't predetermined the outcome here. So even when they used a process that I think they should never have used and that he thought they should never have used, they then abused the way they did that. So as I said in my opening statement, when an agency wanders off of a well-worn pathway to create a unique process, there's serious opportunity for abuse, and boy, did they do that here.
I've got a slide I'd like for the committee to put up, and to the point you just made, this email appears to lay out the playbook for initiating a preemptive 404C action. Is it troubling that EPA employees appear to have made up their minds in stopping the Pebble Mine so early in the process? And how much faith can you have in the objectivity of the EPA to evaluate the mine?
Well, I don't any longer have any such faith, Congressman. I'm no longer surprised by these kinds of emails. This is another one that I just saw quite recently, yesterday for the first time, with the release of another committee's report. And I'm shocked at the number. But let me also remind you, Congressman, that Phil North is a guy that was using his private emails to hide, I suspect, the most damaging of his emails.
We've had some issues with private emails. You may have heard of them.
Yes, I have. This is what he says when he's communicating on the EPA email process. I wonder what those others say, Congressman.
There's another slide I'd like to put up. Here again, it's very apparent that the playbook is already laid out and has less to do with establishing the actual science or determining the actual impacts of the project or conducting objective analysis, and more to do with appealing to politics and optics to achieve a certain outcome at the EPA. Would you agree with that?
I do agree, Congressman.
It's almost I hate to even ask the question, but is that the correct way for an agency to make decisions?
Not at all. And also, as I said in my opening statement, when I'd been involved in government, these folks wouldn't have been around anymore.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, before I yield back, I'd just like to point out that the topic of this hearing is just another example of the EPA working outside acceptable parameters, overreaching, and in some cases, in this case, it just appears to be very manipulative of the process to reach a predetermined outcome. And we've seen it in other areas where the EPA is involved, the ozone standard, the Clean Power Plan, the waters of the U.S., and now with Pebble Mine. I just think that at some point the EPA's got to be held accountable for actions such as this. I yield back.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer. The gentleman from Georgia, Mr. Loudermilk, is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It looks like I'm the last one between several people flying home. I'm just amazed. When I hear of all the questions and the testimonies and quite frankly, the evidence that I've seen, this reads more like a novel. We got predetermined outcomes. You testified to potential collusion. Some of those involved in the collusion have moved to other countries and will not respond to our subpoenas or questions. And Mr. Chairman, I don't know how legal it is for us to do a CODEL down to Australia, but if we need to go down there to get some answers, you know, I may be willing to volunteer, but...
true.
And, of course, the using of private emails. Mr. Collier, as I hear the allegations of collusion, that's very troubling. But what's even more troubling is the evidence I see. It looks very, overwhelming that this has happened. I'd like to show you an email conversation between two of the EPA lawyers, Kara Steiner-Riley and Keith Cohen, as well as the employees Phil North and Rick Parkin, who, again, I think Phil is the one who is now in Australia. And they're discussing conversations with Jeff Parker, who is an attorney representing the groups that petitioned the EPA to use a preemptive 404C action. Can we have the slide up? EPA attorney Cohen writes, number one, my observation, Jeff Parker is talking straight to Rick and Phil regarding a matter which EPA is represented by counsel, Kara. I'm sure the rules of professional responsibility in Alaska are like they are everywhere, and that they prohibit Jeff from talking to either Rick or Phil without Kara's consent. We are engaged in a potentially adverse proceeding with them, the petition, possible litigation, and he's a lawyer who's kind of pumping us, including me included, for information he can use to help his client. It sounds like he's talking to Phil about their 404C petition, the status of it, and how to help move it forward. He certainly did so with me. Now, if we could go to the next slide. Cohen sends a follow-up email and writes, I just want to clarify, I am not against helping Jeff or his clients. Again, Jeff representing those opposed to the mine. I am not against helping Jeff or his clients or siding with them on the substantive issues. To me, that sounds like predetermined outcome as well as collusion going on. Is this some of the collusion that you have referred to?
It is, Congressman. When I first saw this collection of emails, and there are another four or five,
And I do have another one to go to after this.
I was shocked. It's one thing to say that it's improper for a lawyer to be talking to someone else's client. That's an ethics rule that anyone that's practiced law is familiar with. But it's like they completely missed the ball. The ball is you shouldn't be talking to him at all. Nobody should. Not about helping draft the petitions that are going to be filed by the native communities, and God forbid, not about letting him draft the decision memo for the regional administrator. They completely missed the ball here, and what it means is that they're colluding with environmental activists on decisions Region 10 has to make appear to be the way the region works.
Let me, since I'm running out of time, can we go ahead and go to the next slide here? And this answers a question that I asked Secretary Cohen in the first panel. Why? Why would you use a private email to conduct business, which is totally improper? Why? Would it be to avoid the Freedom of Information Act? Could that be why you would do something like that? Let's look at this email. Kara, in terms of the record for the decision-making on the 404 petitions, are message chains such as this one protected from FOIA? This is asking, are we going to be protected from FOIA? I think this clearly gives the reason why they're using private emails. Should we be concerned with that? It appears that EPA employees were attempting to prevent the release of this series of email communications because it would show the appropriate contact between EPA employees and you. Would you like to comment? I mean, to me, when I look at this, it's clear. It's clear that there was collusion, there was predetermined outcome, there was potentially illegal activity, a definitely improper activity, as Secretary Cohen mentioned earlier, that they use private emails to conduct official business, which is against EPA policy. And by their own admission, I think it's to keep the American people in the dark, and they knew that they were doing wrong.
Congressman, I agree. And let me also remind you that Phil North, laptop computer crashed.
Yeah.
He was using his personal emails, and he was encrypting thumb drives that he stored documents on.
So they quit need to bind the computers that IRS buys, I guess. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I yield back the balance of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Loudermilk. We have no other members who want to ask questions. Senator Halford, yes.
Just briefly, I'd like to say that although TU has supported me, a number of other organizations in Bristol Bay have also supported me. I consult for a lot of them, and I try to represent them all and work with them all, for them all. They are concerned about fairness as well. They have been under this cloud for well over a decade. They would like to see some resolution. They went to the EPA. When I first talked to EPA people, I was talking about wetlands things. It had nothing to do with, and I didn't understand or know anything about the 404C process.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to make that clear.
Okay.
The people of Bristol Bay went to EPA. EPA didn't come to Alaska to get involved.
Right.
People were concerned.
I just wish they'd followed proper process. And anyway, Mr. Collier, anything you want to clarify? Okay, all set. Thank you both for your testimony today. It was very, very helpful, and we stand adjourned.